You want to know what's on the jump today? I'll tell you what's on the jump today. Joel Embiid tweets he loves playing with Ben Simmons. How much longer will he be a Philadelphia 76ers? The Mavs coaching staff is taking shape around Jason Kidd. Is Luka under any pressure to get out of the first round? And Kevin Love is not interested in taking a buyout from the Cavs. Should he be more open to the idea? And who is the best celebrity hooper? We will give you a few options in a bit. So guard up if you can, because the jump starts now. And apparently I'm the only host that can play with a basketball and do this. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Richard Jefferson, and I'll be joined by Kendrick Perkins and Brian Windhorst later in this segment. But first, here's some of the latest from around the league since our last show. Joel Embiid tweeted, "I love playing with Ben," in response to a report about a rift between himself and Ben Simmons, who has been on the trade block since the 76ers' disappointing second-round exit in the playoffs. And the Bucks rewarded their head coach, Mike Budenholzer, with a multi-year extension with rumors that he was on the hot seat. Coach Bud delivered in a big way, though, delivering the Bucks their first title in 50 years. And Rondo is back with the Lakers. Rondo believes wisdom is definitely the key to winning a championship, and he hopes to bring that wisdom to a veteran Laker roster after winning a title with them in the bubble last year. And the Hawks agreed on a two-year extension with Clint Capella. More on this to follow in a second, but Atlanta locked in their starting center after a surprise run to the Eastern Conference Finals. And now joining us to discuss some of the news is our NBA reporter, Tim Bontemps. Thanks for joining me, Tim.
Great to be here, Richard. Yeah. Happy to be here.
You are my first guest ever, so I'm really, really excited.
I know. I'm honored.
All right. Well, after Joel Embiid tweeted a denial of the USA Today story on the rift between himself and Ben Simmons, are the 76ers under any pressure to make a Simmons trade soon?
No, I don't think they are. And Richard, the reason why is because this situation has not changed from the moment that Ben Simmons passed out of that dunk with 3.5 minutes to go in game 7 of that series against the Atlanta Hawks back in June, right? From that moment until now, everybody has known that this is eventually going to have to end with Ben Simmons playing elsewhere. You go back to what Joel Embiid said after that game, with what Doc Rivers said after that game, and the fact that after several years, this partnership of Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons has not gotten to the Eastern Conference Finals even, let alone been a true championship-level team. Now, that being said, Philadelphia is as prepared for this situation as any team in the league for two reasons. One is that, in Daryl Morey, they have probably the single best executive in terms of being able to handle this kind of situation and not worry about having an uncomfortable, drama-filled preseason and beginning of the season with a situation like this dragging out. We've seen in the past Daryl Morey is not going to make a trade just to make a trade to get out of an uncomfortable or difficult situation. But the other reason, Richard, is that when you go back to situations like this in the past, whether it's Anthony Davis or James Harden before he got traded to Brooklyn last year, those kinds of guys had the situation in their control where it was, hey, we're trying to go play on a really good team and the teams we're leaving are going to be rebuilding, right? The Philadelphia 76ers have Joel Embiid, arguably the best player in the NBA right now. They want to be a championship caliber team right now. And Ben Simmons is their one ability or one piece to still remain at that caliber of a team after they trade him. So they can't turn around and trade him for future draft picks and spare parts and go into some sort of rebuild. Whatever trade they make has to be for impact pieces that can help them win right now. And until they get a trade like that, Ben Simmons, I think, is going to be a Philadelphia 76er.
Okay, well, that's fair, because one tweet is not going to change things that were said on a podium after a very devastating loss and, you know, probably not a lot of communication between the team and the franchise, because that's been what reported. What is the best fit for Ben Simmons right now?
Right now, Richard, I don't think there is a best fit, and that's sort of the problem here, right? If there was a trade that allowed him to go somewhere else and get Philadelphia either a star-level player, a Damian Lillard, a Bradley Beal, some guy of that caliber, or pieces that they could later turn into a guy like Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal or some player of that caliber, I think the Sixers would have made that trade already. But the problem is those guys have not expressed any willingness to be traded right now. And the offers that the Sixers are getting are not up to the level that they think is commensurate with a guy who's got 4 years left on his contract and is a 25-year-old three-time All-Star. So until either side of that equation changes, I think this is what we're going to be looking at for quite a while.
No, that's fair. I just mentioned the Clint Capella extension at the top of the show. What are your major takeaways from that two-year, $46 million deal?
Well, as you said in the lead-in, Richard, the fact that Clint Capela is back in Atlanta is a great thing for the Hawks. They obviously broke through and got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They lock up John Collins this offseason. They lock up Trae Young this offseason. Now they lock up Clint Capela this offseason. Combine those three guys with Bogdan Bogdanovic, and those four guys are now signed for at least the next 3 years. So this team that finally did break through behind Trae Young and make that run to the East Finals has a chance to continue forward. But I think the bigger thing about this, Richard, is that it is a sign of where the NBA is headed. You look at Clint Capela signing this extension. We're running this graphic right now with LeBron, Marcus Smart, Drew Holiday, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kevin Durant, Paul George. All these guys have signed extensions over the past year or so. And that is a sign of where the league is headed in terms of player movement. We've seen so many summers over the past several years where we saw guys like LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard and Kevin Durant all change teams in free agency and have big, you know, free agent moments in July and August. Well, now, with the way things are going now, with the salary cap flattening out because of the pandemic and the lack of cap space around the league and the changes in the extension rules making it more favorable for guys to stay with their teams, we're seeing a lot of guys choosing to lock themselves into their current situations. And that's why I'm in here in Chicago today, and the Chicago situation with Zach LaVine is the one to monitor going forward this season, because Zach LaVine is the one guy going into next summer. Bobby Marks has declared it the summer of Zach LaVine. He's the one star player that's currently sitting out there who's unsigned next summer. And the Bulls had a chance to potentially give him a renegotiation and extension for a max contract this offseason. They chose instead to go get Lonzo Ball and DeMar DeRozan and build their team now to try to be as good as possible to try to allow Zach LaVine to have some success that he's never had in the NBA. As we learned earlier this summer, he's never won four games in a row in the NBA in his career. So the Bulls decided that trying to have as good a team around him as possible was the best chance to keep him. We'll see if that proves to be the case as this year plays out.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by, Tim. Putting talent around a star is always the best way to convince them to stay. So thank you, Tim. Getting back to the Sixers, Joel Embiid tweeting about Ben Simmons, quote, "He's an amazing player and we all didn't get the job done. There's a lot to unpack here. At this time right now, I'd like to bring in my guy, Kendrick Perkins and Brian Windhorst to the show. So, Perk, what do you make about Embiid's tweets about Simmons?"
Well, you know, RJ, when I saw him tweet it out, I was like, hold on, maybe he should be quiet. And then you know what? I'm kind of rolling with Joel Embiid on this one for the simple fact that he's putting people, he's shutting people up by saying, one, it's not a beef between me and Ben Simmons. We have no bad blood. I love what he brings to the table. I love being his teammate. But on the other hand, he put out another tweet that said, you know what? When I was in Philly, they booed me. They booed me, and I embraced it with open arms. We all know that Philadelphia is one of the toughest places for us, the fan base, to play at. And what this goes to show me is that Joel Embiid is in full support of Ben Simmons coming back to Philadelphia to play basketball. Now, whether he messed up in his post-game interview after they lost to the Atlanta Hawks, that's neither here nor there. But what it goes to show me is that Ben Simmons lacked mental toughness. If Joel Embiid could tweet out and say, hey, I was booed and I battled through it and I went out there and gave people 35 to 40 points and those boos turned into cheers, he's telling Ben Simmons, hey, prove the people wrong. I was with the Boston Celtics at a period of time with Paul Pierce, the truth, before he got KG and Ray Allen. He was getting booed. He didn't run from it. He embraced it. Prove people wrong. I think right now we're looking at everything, and, you know, I tweeted something out yesterday from Ben Simmons' point of view, but now I'm giving you my point of view. Ben Simmons played bad last year. Ben Simmons was the one that was lacking confidence. It wasn't Doc Rivers. It wasn't Joel Embiid. It wasn't Tobias Harris. It wasn't Daryl Morey. It wasn't Elton Brand. It was Ben Simmons. So with that being said, hey, you get paid the big bucks to deliver on the big stage, and you didn't do that. So with that being said, get in the lab, work hard, come back, accept the boos, and do what Joel Embiid did. Put the credits and silence them.
The thing about that is, Perk, I'm really glad you brought those other tweets up, because one thing we know about Ben Simmons, he doesn't like to be lectured to. His coaches have tried. Certainly the fans have tried. He doesn't like being told what he should be. And I do think, even though he said he likes playing with Ben, Joel is using those tweets to tell Ben what he should be. Go ahead and keep working. Power through the booze. He had another tweet where he talked about how hard he worked in the offseason to get better, to push back against haters, which is a kind of, again, I think maybe a passive-aggressive statement on Ben, who hasn't always come back with improved skills in the offseason. And it's these kinds of things that are pushing Ben Simmons away. And by the way, it doesn't mean Joel is wrong. And, you know, what Joel and both Doc Rivers said after that unfortunate game against the Hawks, I don't think anybody could look at you and say that that was wrong. It was an unacceptable performance. That series by a player like Ben Simmons was unacceptable. But he doesn't want to be in that environment. And the thing that happened last week that I think is relevant, and you two guys, Richard and Perk, understand this, I think, really well. When Josh Harris, the owner of the 76ers, came out to Los Angeles to sit in the same room with Ben, not having Rich Paul, the agent, deliver it to the general manager, when Ben Simmons looked the owner in the face and said, not only am I going to want to be traded, but I'm not even going to ever come to your building again. When that's issued directly player to owner face to face, history says it's over, no matter what Joel or anybody else says.
Well, Perk, I want to ask you this question. Do you think that these tweets are a little too late for Joel Embiid? Do you think, because this conversation has been going on all summer long, and then after all the trade options, all the rumors, they were like, well, we don't have anything. And it's like, well, let me start tweeting out some nice things about Ben Simmons. Shouldn't he have been tweeting this months ago, trying to repair that relationship?
Well, I think so, but, you know, Ben Simmons haven't been returning nobody phone calls. So we don't know what's been happening behind closed doors. We don't know if Joel Embiid has reached out to Ben Simmons. He didn't answer his phone call. So the only way that Joel could reach out and get a message out to Ben is through using his social media. And to your question, RJ, is that I do think it's too late. And I'm going with Brian on this one. It's too late. And here's why. Ben Simmons is willing not only to sit out training camp and not show up to training camp, he's willing to sit out for however long until he's out of Philly. Do I approve of it? No, but I'm not Ben Simmons. Here's one more other thing that I want to add. People talk about Doc Rivers and how he dropped the damn ball of what he said in this post-game interview. But one thing people don't give Doc Rivers credit for is how he stuck with Ben Simmons when people were saying that he needed to bench Ben Simmons when they were going 7 or 8 possessions in the game and couldn't get their offense running because they was messing up the floor of the offense because they was going to hack a Simmons. And Doc Rivers told the reporters, I'm not going to sit Ben. He's our guy. So keep the same energy. Doc Rivers has been in full support of Ben Simmons since he got to that organization.
No, that's fair, because he was supporting him the entire way. Well, Brian, you're going to take a segment off, but stick around because you'll be back with us later. So my guy J.R. Smith is in college at North Carolina A&T, and he's been live tweeting this entire experience. Here's an example. Another great tutoring session. For sure, asking for more hours. A little extra help ain't never hurt nobody. As you see a few of these other tweets, Perk, how much fun do you think J.R. is having in college life?
He's having a good time, RJ, and he's embraced it with open arms. And look, you know that's our brother. We call him Swish, but he's showing humility, he's showing security, and he's showing that he's not afraid. And I love this journey. I want him to tweet more.
Are you going to go back to college? I think you and him as roommates, you both came out of high. What's up?
I only will go back if you be my tutor and come to school with me. Don't start the other day. Mm-mm.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Richard Jefferson, still here with Kendrick Perkins, and now joining The Jump, while you might know him as a football analyst, he also played AAU basketball, and this individual played with Perk. They grew up playing in Houston. Marcus Spears. Like, look, I might need an interpreter for this segment with you two, but I think we're going to get through it. How do you guys even have the same laugh, the same beard? Look at this. Look at that big Perk. See, that's little Marcus right there.
Dudes. Yeah. You already know. Yeah. It's a lot of ballers came through them Houston hoops, man.
So, funny thing, small, short story, Houston hoops, Their AAU coach was my college roommate, and he is now the head coach over at Georgia Tech. So shout out to my guy, Josh Pastner.
Sure is.
I'll be seeing him. Josh Pastner, I'll be seeing him this weekend. So look, there's this footage of Adam Sandler playing pickup with some NBA stars that's been floating around. Sandler's one of the few celebrities known to be a bit of a hooper. Here's what Shaq had to say about Sandler's game on the Greenlight podcast with Chris Long. Quote, Sandler's legit. Not pro legit, but he's definitely LA Fitness, 24-hour fitness legit. He's a great facilitator. Now, Swagoo, who do you think is the best celebrity hooper?
Master P, Percy Miller, from the pool, New Orleans. Make him say, I'm telling y'all, man, listen, this is crazy. But obviously, we know P played, had a little spat in the NBA. But also, when I was at LSU, man, they used to come up to the LSU Rec Center. Him, his brother Silk, a lot of these dudes. Shaq played up there, Eddie George. We used to hoop in the LSU Rec Center. And I was like, man, P can hoop. Right. And he got some sons that can hoop as well. But when you like, we always have this idea with the celebrity guys is that it's just, you know, they play in the gym and they good when they playing against other dudes that ain't played in either in the NBA or dudes that could have played or played in college. Man, I'm telling y'all. P was that deal, bro. Playing against him at the LSU Rec Center, watching him play for Charlotte, and seeing him do his thing time and time again when we was playing pickup ball, I was like, he got just as much game as a lot of dudes I played against that at least went to college and played D1.
Yep, and RJ, guess what? I'm piggybacking off of Big Swag Goo. Here's why. And if you don't, I feel sorry for your loss, baby. Like them good people down there in Louisiana. Prayers up to Louisiana and everybody that was dealing with the hurricane. But let me say this. Spears brought it up. And I don't want this to get overlooked or overshadowed. The fact that Master P even had the opportunity to play in the NBA. The fact that he wore an NBA jersey speaks volumes alone. No other celebrity ever touched the foot of an NBA court, got a call, or signed a contract. So, I mean, whether people want to talk about it was politics or whatever the case may be, he still had to show some type of level of competitiveness along with a skill set to even step foot in the NBA. So I'm going with Louisiana-born Master P as well.
See, now this is the thing. I'm really kind of leaning toward 2 Chainz. You know, so you got the 2 Chainz, you got Quavo. You see, I don't trust these hype videos that I see online because it's like, you know, they're edited. But look at the, like this one-on-one with Harlow. Like, Harlow didn't have a chance. I'm not going to count that bank. But at the end of the day, we had Ice Cube on this show a couple of weeks ago, and we asked who the best rapper basketball player was, and he said Shaq had hardware. So until somebody gets a platinum album like Shaq, it's still Shaq. So I got to go with 2 Chainz because 2 Chainz played D1 ball. If you play D1 ball, then to me, and you're 6'5", so that's going to be the individual I'm going to say. But I have seen Quavo and some of these other guys put in some work, so that's tough. But let's move on to the Lakers, who just added Rondo to their roster. Rondo spent time with the Hawks and Clippers last year, and he was traded to Memphis this offseason before agreeing to a buyout, which freed him up to return to LA. Now, Swagoo, how much do you think Rondo can help the Lakers?
It's huge, RJ. And listen, man, we just came off Shaq talking about Adam Sandler being a great facilitator. That's what Ray John is going to be. Mm-hmm. He's there to take LeBron off the ball. He's there to take Russ off the ball and allow them to do what they do by roaming and moving and cutting to the basket. But also high pick and roll, high screen with AD. They got big fellas. They got all of the big fellas back in their championship run. Here's the thing people forget about Ray John Rondo. And I know both of y'all played in the NBA and y'all played against him. A on-ball defender as well. And listen, man, I know we don't like talk. On my side of the coin in the NFL, they don't like talking about defense, and they don't like talking about defense in the NBA either. But when you have Rajon Rondo, you feel comfortable with the guy that's bringing the ball up the court, but you also, he will pressure you 90 feet. Mm-hmm. He'll pressure you that entire way. But for me, when you look at the Lakers, right, and everybody talking about how old they are and experience absolutely matters, Rajon is there to do what he did 2 years ago when they were in the bubble. High screen and roll. I don't know if he gonna knock down shots like he did. If he do, the Lakers are gonna win it even more than I thought they were gonna win it. But on ball defender, a facilitator, a guy that can get LeBron and Russ off the ball and run high screen and roll with AD, obviously. And that's where the strength lies, man. And when you start thinking about this season that's coming up, we got Giannis fresh off of a championship. A team made moves, but you saw that experience take hold in the finals. You saw defense become prominent in the NBA finals like it does every single year. So we're bringing in Rajon, an on-ball defender, a facilitator, to give your guys some rest. You'll be okay with that move that's been made. I see Perk done fizzed out because I'm dropping all this NBA hot fire.
Like, listen, you could keep dropping this NBA hot fire. I have no issue. And you know what? Thank God we lost Perk and we still got you here. This is a much better combination. My thing is, in 2019, when you talk about a distributor and everyone's like, oh, the Lakers got all these point guards, is there one ball? People forget that the Lakers were fourth and then Bron and Rondo got hurt in the same game. So this does, it gives you an opportunity so that if Bron needs time off, then you have two ball handlers. You got Russell Westbrook and you got Rondo. If Russell needs time off, now you got Bron and Rondo. You're not putting so much pressure on your superstars. So I think that this situation is perfect for the Lakers. Swaggoo, thank you so much on stopping by. You can catch more of Marcus on NFL Live right after this show at 4 Eastern on ESPN2.
Yes,
welcome back to the Jump. Tim McMahon is now joining us to talk a little bit about the Dallas Mavericks. So, Tim, one, thank you for joining me.
Appreciate you having me.
You were giving me a little bit of mess about was I wearing yoga pants. Are you wearing pants or are you wearing shorts right now?
That is a personal question, RJ. Let's focus on basketball.
Okay. Look, we know Luka Doncic is a man in Dallas, but his career has started off with two first-round exits. Is there any pressure on Luka to go a little bit deeper in the postseason this year?
You know, I think when you're considered a perennial MVP candidate, which he already is, and you haven't gotten past the first round, there's naturally going to be some pressure. Having said that, when you look at why haven't the Mavericks been able to get out of the first round, I'm going to look for reasons beyond the guy who has averaged an efficient 34-9-9 in the playoffs of last year. I'm going to look at, you know, maybe the guy who had 46-14 in a Game 7 loss. So really, I think there's pressure more so on the Mavericks as an organization. New GM, new coach, pretty much the same core back. They've got the most important piece of a contender in Luka. They have to figure out how to put the pieces around him, how to, you know, create the vibe around him to be able to make a deep playoff run.
Well, let's talk about some of the pieces that they have around him. You bring in a new head coach. You bring in a new GM. You really haven't changed the roster that much. Like, is this roster good enough to get them into the second round, into a deep postseason? Because you said the organization is on the pressure.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously they have to prove that. The additions they made, Reggie Bullock, Sterling Brown, you know, some 3-and-D type of guys. But really, so much of this is depending on Kristaps Porzingis emerging as that legitimate second star. There's been some awkwardness with him and Luka. Porzingis certainly wasn't utilized the way that he wanted to be, the way he hoped to be. But he has a healthy offseason. He has as much to prove as arguably any max player in the NBA. And I really think so much of the Mavericks' success depends on Porzingis proving that he is worth that contract and that he can be that complimentary star next to Luka.
Yeah, well, so we talked about Jason Kidd just got the job. Jason Kidd just added Jared Dudley to his staff, one of the most universally liked players in the entire NBA. What kind of impact do you think he will have on that roster?
Well, you hear so much coming out of L.A. about his value to the Lakers as a guy who, you know, he wasn't in the rotation, but he's earned a reputation as such a, you know, a great teammate, such a great locker room presence, you know, such a valuable mind. And so, you know, Jason Kidd, obviously having been in L.A., having also coached Dudley, Milwaukee, identified him as a guy who he thought had immense coaching potential. And as soon as Dudley didn't have a playing job, instead of Dudley stealing your gig, RJ, which I thought certainly was a possibility.
Come get it.
They decided to, you know, put him front of the bench right next to another coach that Luke is very familiar in, and Igor Kostyukov.
No, I think that's a great idea. I think it was a great move by Jason Kidd because I think there's a little bit of a culture shift that's happening in Dallas. So get the old guard out and get the new guard in. So thank you so much for joining us, Tim.
Appreciate you having me.
No problem. Now to news from this morning. In a memo obtained by ESPN, the NBA is mandating that unvaccinated NBA players will have lockers as far away as possible from vaccinated teammates and will have to eat, fly, and ride buses in different sections. The rules are not final and are subject to ongoing talks with the National Basketball Players Association, but the guidelines make it clear that vaccinated and unvaccinated players will have very different off-court experience during the upcoming season. Here to talk more about these protocols, we have Brian Windhorst and Kendrick Perkins. Brian, how effective do you think these new rules will be?
Yeah, what they're trying to do, look, they cannot get an agreement, as none of the pro sports have. They cannot get an agreement to force all players to get vaccinated. So they're going to make, in addition to have safety, they're going to make life as uncomfortable as possible for players who are not vaccinated. And so, you know, there are testing situations. So unvaccinated players will have to test every day, just like they did last year. Unvaccinated players will not. Players who have close contact with people who are positive for the virus will have to, if you're vaccinated, you won't have to quarantine. You can keep playing if you're negative. If you're not vaccinated, you have to quarantine for 7 days. But the real things where they're trying to make them uncomfortable, as you mentioned, the different places they can sit. And let's just start right with the airline situation. Most NBA teams use the same set of charter planes. There's a nice cabin for the players. You and Perk know it well. There's setups just so you can play cards with each other. Well, in this new rules, it says right there in the memo, if you're unvaccinated, you're going to probably have to sit back with the other staff members. Which, you know, I know it's not the middle seat in coach, but it is not the same, and there's no card games. So, you know, in a locker room, you know, it's only so big. They can only push you so far away. For a bus, okay, you may have to sit at the front of the bus when all your friends are at the back. But on those 4 and 5 hour flights, if you can't sit in those big comfy seats or be able to fall asleep in the laid back seating, or more importantly, play poker, you may consider reconsider that vaccine. And that's one of the things the NBA is doing. And I know you two were known to play a hand Bure or two on the planes.
Yeah, I was gonna say that, Brian. We weren't playing poker, but Bure and Gus were the primary games that we were playing on the plane, but that's another story. RJ didn't indulge, but I was heavily.
They were terrible games. They're awful games. They take no skill, but continue.
That's not for us to debate right now. Here's the thing. The NBA is just playing chess right now with the players, okay? And what they're doing right now is they're putting out these guidelines and really saying, hey, look, if you get vaccinated, these are the things that's going to happen for you. If you're not, it's almost somewhat of a punishment, or you're going to have to take a back seat. So what it's telling the NBA players is that, hey, if I'm vaccinated, I have a little bit more leeway. If I'm vaccinated, I get to enjoy the luxury of riding on the front of the plane and being involved with the card games and the team camaraderie. So right now, I just think, yes, they're sending out a memo, but I do think it's a plan behind this memo. I think it's a hidden agenda behind this memo. It's for more guys, to encourage more NBA players to go out there and get the vaccine.
Well, my question to Brian is, like, okay, so how do they handle the benches? How do they handle the lockers? How do they handle, you know, you talk about bus rides and all, like, how do you handle that? Because we talk about just the plane flights, but there's so much more going on. And by the way, players are still going out to dinner together, even if they're not riding on the same, you know, bus or sitting at the same table on the plane.
Of course, and they're also playing right next to each other on the court and at practice. Let's not forget that. But when you're under the NBA, rules, when you're, you know, with the team, if you're at a team meal, you're not allowed to sit next to a vaccinated player. Is not allowed to sit directly next to an unvaccinated player. They have to sit feet apart. And I don't know how they're going to enforce that, but that's what the rule is. As far as the benches go, the benches are going to be returned to normal. There may be some rules about how close certain players are going to be to each other, but those aren't in here. But in general, they're going to try to, you know, frankly, make it almost like, a two-class system in certain ways, vaccinated and unvaccinated.
That's going to be tough. I'm really interested to see how everything is going to work out, whether it's benches, playing, planes, all that stuff. But thank you, Brian. Perk, you stick around for a little bit more. Coming up, we'll take a look at the Lakers' schedule to open the season. How important will it be for them to get off to a hot start with 12 of their first 15 games at home? That's next. Stick around. I was like, Marcus Spears. I was like, the football. And they were like, wait, what? And I was like, see, this is what they don't understand. They don't understand the hours of conversation. Well, again, we got to save some of this for the show. They don't understand the hours of conversation we had at Get Up. That's all we would do is sit down. You didn't even pay attention to the football stuff. He was like, I got this. Let's talk hoop.
Bro.
They don't know.
Bro,
come on, man.
Y'all know how much I love it.
That's why we bring you here. That's why good vibes only. Tell them.
Straight up.
And you know what? This is the thing. I like your energy so much better than Perks. I like your energy so much better than Perks. Let's go. There is regular season NBA basketball just next month. And the Lakers and their revamped squad have a favorable schedule to tip things off. In fact, 12 of their first 15 games are in Staples. Take a look at how they opened the year. Let's take a look. You see a ton of home games against quality opponents. A whole lot of home games there, Brian. So I want to start with you. Given the schedule, do you anticipate a fast start for the Lakers, or will it take some time to let all these pieces kind of gel?
Well, first off, nature is healing because in a typical year with Staples Center, the Lakers do have a heavy home schedule. So this means we're back closer to normal, so that's happy. I will say that with so many new players, I'm not sure it matters who the Lakers are going to play, and I would encourage everybody to not react either high or low to that first month. Now, let me just point out that historically, Russell Westbrook, when he got traded to the Rockets, they got off to a slow start as his teammates learned how to play with him. When he got traded to the Wizards, slow start as his teammates learned to play with him. When LeBron had a new lead guard to play with in Dwayne Wade in Miami, slow start, 9-8. When he moved to Cleveland, new lead guard Kyrie Irving, slow start, 19-20. So listen, if they start out 15-5, great. But if they don't, regardless of this home schedule, don't overreact to it. This team might be designed to start slow.
No, Brian, listen. This team is going to get off to a great start. And look, this started off being at home, having this many games at home to start the season, helped the quote-unquote senior citizens. Because now they get their own facility. They're able to get in their own cold tub. They're able to sleep in their own bed. So, you know, for them being as old as they are to the rest of the world, I don't believe in that. That helps them, okay? But when you look at this team, they have six Hall of Famers on their squad, right? Six Hall of Famers. You got Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, all these guys, and you have so much better leadership that is different now. You have guys like Trevor Ariza, who has been to the promised land, who has won a championship. You have so much experience that guys are going to make it work. See, the difference with LeBron in Miami, he was trying to figure it out. He hadn't been to the mountaintop. He had won a championship. But when you look at a guy like Dwight Howard, he's won a championship. Rajon Rondo won a championship. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, they won championships so long with Trevor Ariza. So these guys know that the sacrificing and everything else that comes with it, they're going to hit the ground running, okay? And when I say running, I mean sprinting, Jamaican women style.
Okay, that was an interesting transition there. My thing is, I'm kind of with Wendy on this one. When you look at the history of Russell Westbrook and even LeBron James, when he has these superstar teammates, it takes him a little bit of time to kind of get acclimated. So maybe the home schedule will work in their favor. Maybe it won't. We'll have to see. But let's get to some news on the Nets from today. According to The Athletic, free agent Paul Millsap has decided on the Brooklyn Nets as his destination for next season. The four-time All-Star could provide a lot of experience on this roster. And also from The Athletic, LaMarcus Aldridge has been cleared to return to NBA action after being forced into early retirement in the spring due to some heart complications. He's reportedly leaning towards joining the Nets as well. So, Perk, Do either of these players give you more confidence in the Nets' big man's depth?
Hell no. And here's why. Because all three of those players are the same players, in my opinion. All of them need the ball in their hands. All of them are subpar three-point shooters. I mean, Blake Griffin showed us signs last year that he's still able to get up above the basket. But if you go back, and look at the history of teams that won NBA championships, what do you need? Rim protection. And what did the Nets, who did the Nets not use? DeAndre Jordan. Matter of fact, he's been on the market. So when I look at the other three guys, at Aldridge, Millsap, and Blake Griffin, none of those guys are consistently controlling the paint from a defensive standpoint. And when you're trying to win an NBA championship, when you're trying to beat the Bucks, you're going to have to go through the Heat, Philadelphia 76ers. You need somebody in that middle that's going to be able to anchor that defense consistently through a seven-game series.
Yeah, so I think it makes it pretty obvious with these moves, if Marcus Aldridge goes there, that DeAndre Jordan is going to get bought out, because otherwise they're going to have six centers on their roster. And I will say, and I say this every year, and actually it applied to you two gentlemen who were, you know, starter line players. Richard was a high paid star in the middle of his career. At the end of your career, you guys came to championship contenders on minimum contracts, and you had smaller roles. So if you look at Paul Millsap as the guy from 3-4 years ago in Denver who was making $30 million and expected to average near a double-double, no, he's going to disappoint you. If you expect Paul Millsap to help them win 3, 4, 5 games and maybe help them in a playoff game or two, making the minimum salary, then you're going to have you're going to feel better about it. And so, you know, there were 3 or 4 teams who are interested in Millsap, so it's a good pickup. But they do have to do some cleanup on their roster, because I think Nick Claxton should be playing. I don't think this should cost him playing time, and I think they got to get DeAndre Jordan out of there, because this isn't going to work with this many guys.
No, Nick Claxton, he literally looked like Jared Allen reincarnated. He was just doing all the things that he was doing. The reason why I kind of like this is because when you're talking about playing small, then you're going to have 5 smalls on that court. I still think LaMarcus Aldridge versus a small in the paint is a bucket. I still think Paul Millsap, if you put an inexperienced small on him, so you're not going to double team. So I think this is offensively, and I still... Perk, if you don't sit up straight, I swear to you right now. You embarrass me in front of company. Come on.
No. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but look, just because you, by the way, you're doing a great job today of hosting, but just because you're sitting in that seat doesn't mean I have to agree with you. Let me tell you why. Because you're sitting up here thinking on an offensive-minded standpoint. I'm going back to defense. Again, what wins championships? Defense. Yes, everybody looked at Giannis last year and said, oh, he had 50 points, which he did. Oh, he had 14 rebounds, which he did. But nobody want to talk about the 5 blocks that he had. Nobody want to talk about how he was able to switch out on 1-5 pick and rolls. Defense win championships. You have to hang your hat on the defensive end. Don't come give me that D'Antoni and Steve Nash stuff about going 5 out and 5 small and all that baloney. You have to buckle down and defend. Just like in the Olympics with Drew Holiday getting added to that.
Okay, well, we're going to see if we can turn down the volume on Kendrick Perkins' mic. But coming up, Kevin Love has $60 million left on his deal and reportedly has no interest in a buyout. What's going to happen with this contract in Cleveland?
The Jump is brought to you by Gatorade. Whatever path you take to greatness, greatness starts with G.
Welcome back to The Jump. Thanks to Kendrick Perkins and Brian Windhorst for hanging out with me. Now, Woj reported this week that Kevin Love has no interest in a buyout. He has 2 years and $60 million left on his Cavs deal. Love's agent even said there has been no talks with Cleveland on a buyout. So, Wendy, I want to know, does Kevin Love need to be more open to this idea of a buyout with the Cavs?
Yes, he does. And it just depends on what K-Love want, right? I think when you look at it, the writing is on the wall. They drafted Evan Mobley, who I believe is going to be a stud. His future is bright. If I'm Kevin Love, I need to get somewhere that, one, I can play. Two, that I can continue to get back to the Kevin Love of old, averaging 20 and 10, and trying to win more championships. The Cavs have shown us that they're wanting to go young, that they're going young. So if I'm K-Love, yes, consider a bow, please.
Oh, he wants out of Cleveland. He just doesn't want to have to buy himself out. He wants the full $60 million. And now that they've drafted Mobley, they've signed Larry Markkanen, and they've extended Jared Allen, he knows that there's no room for him anyway. And so why would he negotiate to give up $10 or $12 million like Blake Griffin did? Just make the Cavs outright release him. It's a standoff in that way.
Well, I think there's two options here for Kevin, because if he gets bought out, this individual could go to Brooklyn and that would be a problem. He could go to the Lakers and with that shooting, that could be a problem. Or he could possibly get a contract from a team with some cap space. So there is a ton of options. Yeah, but
minutes.
It doesn't matter. Stop looking at other people's pockets, Perk. Thanks to Perk and Brian for joining me. I'll be back tomorrow on the same time, ESPN2. See you then. I don't know what Perk's saying. Did we cut his mic?